Tay, and I'm an alcoholic. First of all, it's an honor to do this. I haven't done it in a while, so I'm pleased to be on here. Thanks for having me, Chris. For the grace of God and the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been sober since the December 30th, 2006. And I remember that significant day because I couldn't even make it another day to New Year's Eve, which I always thought was kind of a proof that I had reached a bottom. And that bottom came. It was the bottom that I consider the bottom of my own. You know, when I first came into the rooms, I was coming in the rooms trying to save a marriage and get my life together. But I wasn't necessarily doing it for all the right reasons. I wasn't doing it for myself, and I wasn't honest and open-minded and willing to do all the things that it took. It's funny, anytime I get ready to tell my story, I always think like, okay, how am I going to break this down? Like I'm going to come up with some new way of spinning this thing when there's really only one way I see to do it. And that's what it was like when I was out there, and then my experience, strength, and hope. So in a nutshell for me, what it looked like for me is I was a binger. I was a binge drinker. I was a binge whatever came my way. And what I mean by that is from the first time I ever had a drink of alcohol, when I was probably about 16, I got drunk. To my knowledge, I got drunk every single time I ever opened a can of beer or sipped a wine, anything like that. Every single time. I can't remember a time. If I didn't get drunk when I drank, it was because there was some other circumstance preventing me, like physically preventing me from just getting wasted. I didn't know any other way. It was binge all the way. And, as the disease progressed for me, it became, I was that guy that just never wanted the night to end. And for a long time, it was like, as long as there was somebody there to keep going with me, I'd go as long as I could physically. And in the end, when it was really bad, I didn't need anybody else to go there with me. I would just go there. And so, you know, that's what it looked like for me. I grew up in the Deep South. I had a loving family, had everything that, everything that I could ask for, to be honest with you. It pops out the line in the book. My troubles were my own making, stuck out to me the first time I read the book. And that was a big part of my recovery, was reading that page. About how it started, it was nothing special. I think my parents didn't drink much around me growing up. I had, they would have like this one big Christmas party every year, and my dad would have a bunch of his associates over, and there would always be a ton of alcohol left over, and it would just sit in the fridge in our garage until like some other event happened. My parents just didn't drink that much. And it occurred to me one day when I was a teenager that, hey, you know, they're not really keeping track of what's out there because it's just always there. So I just started drinking them by the bottle, you know, until slowly it was noticeable that there was a lot going gone. I think that's when my dad first started to notice that I drank. And, you know, I started skipping school. I missed like, I think, 30 days of school my senior year, and had to come back. And barely made it out my second senior year from just running around and getting in trouble. The drinking, I ended up moving out of the house and moving away to attempt to go to college. And what that looked like for me was a couple weeks of school and then a goose egg. meaning that like I just once I realized I didn't have anybody making me go to class, that wasn't happening. And it was mostly just, you know, occasional pot smoking, but it was mostly alcohol. You know, it was like, I always felt like I had to be out, and I never felt, and this is important to point out, I never felt comfortable, in my own skin, which is right there in the book. I never felt comfortable in my own skin unless I was, the drinking kind of made it even for me. You know, I felt like school was never a big part of my story. I had trouble paying attention, a couple different learning disabilities, you know, made it that way for me. And, you know, it just didn't work out for me. So I always felt like I didn't fit in with everybody else. I'm sure some of y'all can resonate with that. But drinking, I could be the life of the party. You know, I could be the class clown. I could make people laugh. I could, you know, when everybody was drinking together, I felt like we were on the same page. So that was, that made me feel like I fit in, you know? And so, that started the journey of like it just being hand in hand with everything that I did. And, you know, I ended up not going to school, became a chef full time. And, I don't know if any of you've worked in the restaurant and bar industry, but it's a whole lot of drinking and a little bit of working. And, that went perfect with my life and, went hand in hand with me for many years. And, I did pretty good. I managed to get by doing a good job of still having a job and still a job didn't interfere with my partying and partying wasn't interfering with my job too much at that stage, of my life. And I took the chef thing pretty far, ended up being a executive sous chef under a pretty prestigious chef. And was, you know, I say this because I want to paint the picture of that I had things to lose and I lost them. So, long story short, I took the chef career to about the executive chef level, and I got this job working, for MGM at a casino and resort. And it was a really nice restaurant and I had everything going for me, but, I just couldn't stop, drinking. I worked a lot. And so I felt like I needed to go out to kind of have a life. And when I would go out, all bets were off after the first sip. You know, it didn't matter what I had going on, what level of importance, something that was going on in my life was. An example was, I remember there was this event that was coming up at the casino, and my restaurant was a big part of the event. And I had to be, at the news station, the next morning at like 7 o'clock in the morning to cook on news on TV live. So I went out the night before, at about midnight. And then I remember seeing every hour kind of go by leading up to it. And, I had to be there at 7 o'clock, and I specifically remember it being about 5 a.m. and I was still in this bar that, you know, had like no windows and stuff. And, some of the blackjack dealers were getting off and a lot of them sold drugs. And so I was like, oh, that's right. I'll just get some coke and go do this thing. And so I remember going to the station I was a wreck, you know, and somehow I managed to like, you know, I must've gone to the bathroom 10 times before I even went on live TV to cook. And I remember going on there and somehow pulled it off. And, you know, people were letting me know that I did a good job and everything. But I remember inside feeling like I was out of control. That was like the first moment of really feeling like this is not something that I can control anymore. This isn't making sense anymore. I don't know what's going on, but I wasn't ready to say that I had a problem, but I knew that something was going on. I had met a woman that I ended up marrying. We'd been together for like 5 or 6 years, and the drinking was starting to get in the way there as well, between my job and going out every night. It was a real stress on things, and we ended up separating. And she went to Texas. She went to Austin, and I was still working at the resort in Biloxi. And you know, I just didn't see it going downhill as fast as it was. You know, people around me started to say things like, "Man, you're looking really thin," or "You look like you haven't slept," or you know, all those signs. And I remember it. I started to look at myself in the mirror sometimes and think I looked a little skeletal. And my cure for that was like before work, I would go sit in the sun on my porch thinking that I could like tan over the bags under my eyes and somehow look like a spring chicken and look healthy when I went into work, even though I had been up for like 2 days. You know, it just kind of started to slowly slip out of my control. And, I ended up one day the director of food and beverage came into my restaurant, and they had one rule. You could call in sick, but you couldn't call in sick two weekends in a row on a weekend day or something like that. And I broke the protocol. And when I came in to work, he came in and approached me and said, "I'm going to need you to go upstairs with me and take a drug test." And I said, "Well, let's not waste your time." And he was like, you're going to fail it. And I said, "Yeah, there's no way. I'm on drugs right now." And he's like, "Well, we'll let you resign because you've done such a good job. You know, we'll let you resign. So you'll be able for rehire if you ever need to, but this is pretty much it." And I remember being walked out, you know, hanging up my chef coats, getting my keys, like getting the stuff out of the office. It was all just like a blur, but I remember getting walked out of this like casino, almost like I was being thrown out on the street. You know, it was just like, you're done. And, that still wasn't the end. You know, it was like, I didn't even have a car there that day. And I decided, my parents lived across the bridge from Biloxi and Ocean Springs. And I remember thinking, I'm just going to walk home to my parents' house and work this out. And on somewhere along the long walk, I called some friends back in Austin and was able to secure a job. And by the time I got to my parents' house, I already had another job lined up in Texas. And so I just got home and was like, I'm leaving the casino and I'm moving to Texas. I should point out here that when I was, before I took that job, I was living in Florida and I'd gotten a DWI on like 9/11, literally like the day of the actual 9/11. And I moved away, and just after I got out of jail from the DUI, which was like just a night stay in jail, I moved away and just forget it. I'm not going to live in Florida anymore. I'm just going to move and it'll be fine. And so, in Mississippi, when I was working that job, I had an old Mississippi ID because my parents lived there, and something, when I renewed it, it didn't show up, the Florida thing, because it was so new. But when I moved to Texas, it started popping up. Like if I got a speeding ticket or anything like that, it would pop up that I had a warrant for my arrest in Florida. So just putting that in the story, because that's part of my story later. But, As I moved to Austin, things progressed. It got worse. I had a plan to move to Austin and be a musician at some point. But like Chris alluded to earlier, I always talked about the band that I was going to start. I talked about the things that I was going to do when I was drinking, but that's all I did was talk about them, because I never had the, I couldn't do anything but drink. I couldn't do anything but talk about what I was going to do. You know, it's taking over my life. So, I ended up getting back to Austin and I got another pretty good job and I was working and everything was kind of going my way again, but the drinking wasn't getting better. And, I just remember it just going more and more downhill with every week. And, nothing happens in there other than the fact that I just finally lose complete control. And then, one day at my job, I was at a party the night before and I realized like I wasn't going to make it to my job the next day. I think I had to be there at like 9 o'clock in the morning. And, I watched the time go by all the way till 2 PM the next day. I was at some house. I didn't even know where I was. Everyone else had already gone. And, I was broken. I remember sitting in that room and, the drugs and the beer cans and the bottles and everything was everywhere. And I had like this out of body experience. I was just sitting there and I just remember feeling completely broken. Like this is going to end in me dying if I don't do something. And, I'll never forget. I was able to make it somehow to work. And, my boss, the executive chef, came out back and we sat by this dumpster in the alley and I fessed up with him that I had a problem and all this kind of stuff. And, he's like, "Well, you're no, in no condition to work. So, you know, you're going to have to go." And I remember going home and it was, you know, like a dramatic scene. And I was, I like hit my own reflection in the mirror or something, you know, like I was in a movie or something. And I just remember something occurred to me for some reason. Like this is back when people used phone books, you know, I grabbed the phone book out of the kitchen and just found the intergroup somehow. I don't even know how I found it. Maybe it was under AA in the phone book. I don't know if that's the thing, but somehow I was able to find recovery number in the Yellow Pages, and I called and someone answered the phone and they said, what's your address? And I told them my address and they said, wow, there's a meeting starting in 5 minutes, a block away from you. And it was at Lamar Square, a place called Turning Point. And I remember I walked out, I walked up the street and I got in there and I didn't really know anything about meetings. And I sat down in the chair and I looked around. It was people from all different walks of life, just like us sitting here right now. And I remember I just felt safe, like I was with my people or something. It was a strange feeling. Even though we were all completely different, I felt like everybody in there knew where I was at. And I felt something was removed that day, even in that first meeting. And you know, relapse was part of my story. I mean, I had a little trouble getting that first year. And Chris remembers, I would get, you know, 30 days and 60 days and 90 days. And I think at one point I was doing really good and I even got like 10 months or something. And then, I just would make that one little, that snap judgment mistake, you know, cause I wasn't thoroughly working the steps and I was leaving stuff out, crucial things out. And, you know, after the relapse that I had with 10 months of sobriety, I realized that when I was doing my amends process, that I was leaving out the state of Florida. And it was a pretty significant one. It wasn't like I thought about it all the time, because if I wasn't getting pulled over or anything, you know, it wasn't like it was necessarily on my mind. But in my subconscious, here I was getting my life together. And I was always looking over my shoulder when I was driving. And I had just this impending, like, I'm going to get all my things together. And then this thing's going to come crashing down. So I never forget. I started praying about it. And, you know, I remember calling Chris one day and I said, man, you know, I got this thing in Florida, where I left on this DWI. And I keep getting this like feeling that I needed to just go down there and I needed to just turn myself in. And like, I couldn't sleep. It was like, I just couldn't do anything other than think about that. It was like this voice was just getting so loud. And eventually, I saved up some money and I said, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to buy a plane ticket. I'm going to fly down to Florida and I'm going to turn myself in and I'm just going to give them the money that I got. And hopefully there'll be some left when I get out. And, but I'm going to work it out. I'm going to talk to my sponsor and I'm going to go down there. I'm going to take care of this. And this is going to be my final amends. And then I'm clean. I got this clean sheet of paper on life. And I'll never forget, I get flying down there and being on the plane and then taking a taxi from the airport to the Broward County courthouse or whatever, wherever it was you turned yourself in, and calling Chris on my way in and saying, I'm going in, you know, and him saying, all right, I'll see you when you get out, you know, and hanging up the phone and walking in and just saying, hey, I'm here to set the record straight. And in my mind, I thought that it was going to be like, they were going to slap me on the wrist and be like, thanks for coming down. You know, that's really big of you to do that. But that's not really the way it worked out. It was more like, turn around, put your hands behind your back. And what do you have on you? And, you know, ended up being, like, I think it was like 32, 33 days, in jail in South Florida. And, was one of the best experiences of my life. I was joking around with my wife the other night because we were watching a film and this guy was in prison and I was telling her a little bit of my story, that part about me having to go down and turn myself in and how word got around in my little bunker there that I turned myself in and everybody started calling me the Samaritan and all these people started coming over and wanting to talk to me about their problems in my bunk. And so I was able to talk about the program. I was able to do all these things. I was in a really good place when I did this. You know, I was like deep in sobriety. Are deep into the work in the steps. And, I'm sorry, I really rushed to get to the ninth step because I wanted to make sure I got that in. I should say that like, it really did all start to come together, with each step. When I did my first four step, it was the first time that I realized that, there were reasons that I was the way that I was, you know. I just thought it was all just, oh, I'm just out of control, you know. I didn't realize that it was like I had unrealistic expectations. I worried too much about what other people thought, you know. I was overrun with resentments. You know, resentment wasn't even a word that was in my vocabulary before I came to a meeting. I didn't even know what, I mean, I don't even think I knew what it was. The program kind of taught me everything. I think I tell people sometimes that I feel like my life started at 30, because I was 30 when I got sober. And that was 14 years ago. And thing that I wanted to do with my life now, and I owe it all to sobriety and the program. And I couldn't have done it had I not gotten willing on my own and had the that rigorous honesty, you know, and the willingness, you know, whether you believe it, if you're hung up on the God thing or anything like that, I always tell people, if you can't stop drinking or you can't stop using, and you do it on your own, like you've gotten the proof, then what choice do you have but to believe that a power greater than yourself can give you that, you know? And it's just that decision. It's that decision that I don't know. But what I know is I can't do anything about it. It's not working. What I'm doing is not working. And so I got out of jail and ended up coming back to Austin, and that was it. I mean, that was the no turning back moment for me. That was the clean sheet of paper on life. And started chairing meetings and sponsoring people, and really just the program became my life. And I started my first band with some guys from the program. I'm still friends with them now. And you know, guys that has, and I'm not an expert on the steps. I always tell people this, I'm not an expert on the steps. I don't have this like crazy integral, like, you know, I can't teach them very well sometimes, but what I do have is my experience with it. And it's that I was brutally honest with myself when I worked the steps. And then after I worked the steps the first time with my sponsor, I was able to do, you know, the inventories beyond that to keep myself sane and keep myself in a good spot. And it worked for me, you know, and I've been able to have this really big, really cool life, completely sober just by doing what it says, you know, 10, 11 and 12, just when things start to get tight, I notice it, I write it down, or I talk to another person about it. I make I'm making amends when I need to, so that nothing that bogs me down too much. I try and start out with prayer and meditation whenever possible. And, you know, it's given me a life that thought I could have. I remember this old timer in the men's group I owe a lot of my sobriety to. He used to always say, my name's Sam and I'm a grateful alcoholic, you know? And I used to always think like, what does that even mean when I was first coming in? Like, what is this grateful alcoholic thing? Like, it made no sense to me at all. And one day I was sitting around thinking about it and I was like, yeah, you know what? Like, if I could even casually drink at all, I would never be able to have the life that I have now. Living life on life's terms and just facing things when they come my way and learning how to deal with them the right way has given me a life that I just didn't think that I could have. I mean, I don't know any other way to put it. You know, it's like life began at 30. I tell people that all the time. How am I on time, Chris? I don't even know. I have a hard time remembering some of my story these days. Like when I go back, I see Chris smiling because it's like, you know, never thought I would forget any of that stuff. And when I try and pull it up for a story for days like today now, it's like, it just seems like another lifetime ago. It just seems like another life completely. I'm so grateful for that because I didn't do anything but just burn bridges and walk all over, walk through life, just causing one wreckage after another. And it was all, you know, selfishness. It was just, man, such a different life. I mean, I owe everything I got to being sober, and I plan on staying sober for the rest of my life. But I can't say enough about that amends process. If you get to step 9 and you're don't dilly dally around there, because step 9, if you leave something off of there, you could carry that with you for a long time. And, that was my experience. You know, it was like, I just didn't realize that it was holding me back. And, once I got that clarity and moved on from there, it was never the same. You know, I was able to hold on to it. And, these last couple of years, before the pandemic, I've been traveling so much, playing music and being on the road, that I wasn't sponsoring as much. And I started to feel that, because I got a great joy out of sponsoring guys. And, you know, I was always in a different city. I was always on the go, and I wasn't getting to do it as much, because I, like Chris pointed out, we got the big, cool life and sobriety that I always wanted. And I miss that aspect. And I hope to get back to that, now that I got some more time on my hands. But, I don't know if this is this a question thing here, or is it just talk? Okay. Well, how much time am I at? Okay. Well, I mean, I don't have much more to say, really, other than, you know, I'm just really grateful to be sober and, to have 14 years and, or 13 or 14 years, I'm losing track. I know what, I remember what it's like, to be just struggling to get one day, you know, and I always try and remember that, you know, there, but for the grace of God go I. And, I just, for anybody that's having a rough time with this thing, you can get it. You really can. You can get it. And the steps and the program is the way to go. It was for me. It just worked. It just worked, you know, and, I mean, how to live life. I don't know how else to put it. I mean, it taught me everything. So, I'm Tay, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm grateful to be here. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Tay.
That's awesome.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Tay.
Yes. Thank you.